Hello and welcome back to the Mission Darts podcast, where we get to sit and talk everything darts related. There's been a lot of topics in darts. There are a lot of things I'm sure people are hoping we discuss. But first of all, we've got to discuss, Andy, what are you doing outside?
Yeah, well, I've got a brick wall behind me today. I'm now, you know what I mean? Where I am, it's a bit of a mess. So I thought I'll just use the virtual background for today. But I've got something very important, and I want to say it straight away, and that's about subscribing, okay? I've been looking at the stats, and we got loads of people watching, loads and loads of people watching our videos now, but only about 20% have actually subscribed. So come on, you know that you want us to do more of these videos, bigger and better things. Matt needs the budget, and we need more subscribers. So get that done straight away, and now we can move on.
Well,
You haven't said it's episode 14, Matt. And apparently, in the podcast world, 14 is the average amount of podcasts people do before they decide to quit and go away and do something else. Mm. So is this our last one?
Well,
I hope not.
We'll find out. We'll find out.
That pause was too long. That pause was way too long then, Matt.
I've got something that I really want to share, you see. I'm trying to fly past it. I'm trying to move on to the big thing.
All right.
Look above my head.
Tinsel? Yeah.
Trees here.
To take it down from last year.
When is it sociably acceptable, do you think, to put that? I mean, for me, because I work away a lot, like, for me, I put it up early because I want to enjoy it. And, you know, I'm going to be at Lakeside winning that this year, so I'm not going to be there for another week in December, and then I'm away. So for me, I don't get to have a lot of Christmas time at home. So if I want to enjoy it, I have to put it up earlier.
Yeah, and I always like to put it up early, but I was told it's the 1st of December. But then, like, you're taking it down the first week of January. It's only up for 4 or 5 weeks. So it's like, oh, God, all that trouble you go to. So I've got no problem with you having your Christmas decks up early, mate. You get in the festive spirit. Ho, ho, ho.
It's the season to be jolly. But the thing is, right, this is when people go, oh, it's Christmas. It's Christmas. No, it's the festive period.
Yeah. So let's be festive. We know what you're doing in the festive period. You're playing on the Lakeside stage. So
I'll be winning on the Lakeside stage. Oh, I tell you what, right? I said to you, didn't I? I said I was starting to get ready. I've spent some time with Ryan Searle, and we've had some practice together. It was good.
You've been giving him a game.
It was good.
Was it good?
Now, the thing is, and this is one of the weird things. So I'm practicing now. The deck's up, I get in the car, the Christmas songs are on, the cold weather outside, and I'm practicing for a big tournament. That's getting the fire in the belly already. Like, I'm enjoying that. It's bringing back good memories, good vibes, good times. And then the second I started practicing with Ryan was the person I used to share a room with. Ryan's the person I used to travel with. We used to practice together every single day when we was out on the tour. And the second I started playing with him again, I forgot everything. Like, I forgot about grip issues. I forgot about the nerve issues. I forgot about the wrist. I forgot about everything. And we practiced for 6.5 hours. And I didn't think of it, nothing. It was just in that flow, playing well. And Ryan even said, he goes, I didn't expect you to be this good. Like, I thought you'd... I'm like... I think it's partly because, like... I talk it down quite a lot, and yeah. I'm very like negative.
Well,
about
he knows you're not playing as much anymore. He knows you're not PDC every week, so he would have expectations of what level you are at, and he knows your injury's been kicking in. So sounds like you gave him a good game, then.
Oh, it was a very, very good session. So we did one game. I'm going to tell you a game we did. It's a routine he does with Gary Anderson. As a warm-up. This is a warm-up. If anyone's listening to this, it's a warm-up activity. It's not a progressive drill. It's not a thing that's going to make your game better. It's a warm-up activity. Okay. Now, listen to this. You're going to find this bonkers. So what you do is you start on 210, and you just sort of go up in 10. 9 darts to do 210. You do it 220. You do it 230. You do it. And we did it for half an hour. Now, normally, says with Gary Anderson, he gets to 350-ish.
Ooh. Do you go back down if you miss?
No, It's just a warm-up drill, so it's all just about...
Okay. You know, okay.
We got, and this is no word of a lie, I was shocked myself. The record he's ever got to is 400. We got to 430.
No way.
So, like,
no think way. Of the
420. That is a 140, a 140, and a 140 finish. But we went 180, 180, and then took it out.
Wow.
430 in 9 darts. It was absolute. Because you get to a point where a ton's just nothing. You need a maximum if you're at a ton.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't mean anything. And I was just in that flight. And the thing was, I was believing and genuine, like, we're taking out big finishers and I'm going to the board needing 140 and just believing it's going. And it did. Hitting the dart on the bottom wire and I'm like, oh, I've got you here. And I'm going 140. I knew it was 140 before I threw it. And it was amazing. The standard of that game to hit 430 is absolutely, like you said, he's never that's even done that charts. When he played with Gary Anderson.
Yeah, that's off the charts, Matt. That is. And that kind of reminds me of when we've talked in the past of when you get in that mood that you think you can't miss. That's the greatest feeling ever. And if you can get in that on the Lakeside stage, you'll be unbeatable. You will be unbeatable because that's, you get in that. I've seen you throw where that dart just lands on the bottom wire and you just know it's a 180. You just know it's a 180 and you're a good finisher. So if you score well, happy days. So that's really good that you're practicing.
The amount of 180s well, I hit with Ryan yesterday. Oh. I've just never hit so many 180s in a session. It literally, like, and do you know what? If, and this is sports psychology 101. If you was to say to me, Matt, how did you stand when you did that? Matt, how did you hold the dart? Matt, how did, I don't have a clue.
No.
It just you're went
for, about it.
For those hours, I felt like I was back in the top 64 of the world. It was incredible. It is such a warming feeling inside. And what a day. It really was possibly one of the greatest days I've had in years.
And you've just teed me up so well, Matt. You don't even know it, but you've teed me up so well because basically you've there answered your own question. If I put the time in, can I still play this game? That's what you've answered in your own head. What level am I really at? I know I've won a tournament and I've had a runners-up and I've qualified for Lakeside, but with the big boys, where am I? Where's my game if I really gave it a go again? And we know that injuries and things like that and other commitments now stop you from doing that, but you've answered it. Yes, you can still play. And that leads me on to next Sunday, I'm playing Super League. For the first time in 2 years, right? I'm putting it out there for our podcast listeners to know that I am playing Super League next week. That'll be when this goes out. That'll be a week today when this goes out. And I am nervous as hell. And my plan was this week, I had a pretty fair few evenings this week to get some practice in. And I've been full of a chest infection and I haven't practiced a bit. So now I'm panicking because if I average 55 and come on this channel and go, and you go, how did you go to Super League, Andy? Was it all right? You get a county player or, and I go, no, I got there number 10. And I averaged 55 and he beat me 4-0. How am I ever going to recover from that? Because the question to myself is, if I just put a bit of practice in, a couple of hours a day for a few days, can I still play? And I don't know. Now, if I average 85, we'll get me entered in the World Seniors. You know, we'll have a go, you know. But that's not what I'm expecting. I'll take a W for the team. That'll be great. And we'll just see what happens. We'll see what happens. But it's scary. And here's the funny thing. And you'll get this when you're coaching people. And people say, how do you get over the nerves? And I always used to say to people, go up a level. So the first time you play in the pub, you're nervous, aren't you? And then you start winning games and you get comfortable and you're not nervous. And then you go and play Super League. Oh, Christ, this is nerve-wracking. And then you go and play county and Super League becomes like nothing. It's like there's no pressure in Super League. And then you go pro. You know what I mean? And each level you go up, the previous level doesn't make you nervous anymore because you've conquered that level. Now, I haven't conquered any level for a long time, so I'm nervous.
See, I offer a different level of advice on that one. So,
I'd welcome any tips right now, Matt. I'll welcome any tips for next week.
Well, dealing with nerves, what you're talking about is the point of crisis. When does anyone ever go to a marriage counsellor when they've got problems? They don't prevent the issue. They try and resolve it. Rehab, basically. Same thing with any form of rehab, isn't it? You only ever go when it gets on top of you, like you've spunked all your money away, you've got nothing left. Right, I need to go to rehab now because I've hit rock bottom. That is rehab centres. Rehab centres never really have the person who goes in and go, I'm on a bit of a slippery slope here. I need to stop something before this gets out of control. That's nerves. Because what you will do is you will focus on that moment. You'll focus on that end of the line thing. I get nervous when I throw for a double in a game. Well, is now what you're asking me to do is you're asking me to sort of fix that crisis point. And actually, how do we stop getting to that crisis point in the first place is the issue. So I always say the very first thing that anybody needs to look at, and this is what I do a lot with my coaching sessions, we look at what the person is doing on a day-to-day basis in their own practice, because 99% of the time, in fact, I'm going to go 100% of the times, when someone comes to me as a qualified sports psychologist and they go, "Why? How do I deal with this?" I said, you've trained yourself to get nervous. You have caused the issue with the way in which you are practicing. You have made the problem, and it's not the situation. It's not the environment. You've taught yourself to panic in that environment. So we break it down. We look at it. We go, right, okay. So how can we now practice on our own or with a partner to stop that situation from happening? And I could go on about that. We only do a podcast for an hour, and yeah. I could go on about this for 2 to 3 hours in regards to the issues in which people are facing and the challenges, but a very, very brief summary of it. And people will be sat there right now going, he's actually speaking to me. That's me. The cap fits. I'm wearing it. And most people that it's a winners will do that is they challenge themselves in a way that promotes the issue. For example, let's use around the board, very, very simple example of doing so. You go around the board, and the only way in which you're going to monitor it or track or progress through your practice is to do it in less darts.
Yeah.
So you set a ceiling. So I'm going to play the game, and I'm going to count how many darts it takes me to do it. Then you go, right, I've done it in 31 darts. So now the only score that ever matters to you is doing it in less than 31 darts. Not your average, not your mean, not your par, beat 31 darts. So you challenge yourself against your personal best, the best version of you that's ever existed on the planet that has played that game. That is your challenge. The very, very best. Now, round the world, like darts, is a game of limitations. You can only do a 9-darter. Round the world, you can only do it in 20 darts, which even professionals don't do. So there's only 11 steps now for which you feel you've got better. 11, because you can do it in 30, 29, and so on. Yeah. So you've limited your progression. So you're not going to see progression now because there's not really many more places you can go. So if you do that drill for 365 days every single day, even if you did it where you got better every day, you can only do it for 11 days as it is. So 365 days, you're going to beat your personal best, what, 2 or 3 times at most, which means you are setting yourself up for 362 days of failure on practice. So when you get to a match situation, you've taught yourself to lose. You've taught yourself to fail. So how can we change the criteria in your monitoring progression so you're not challenging yourself against your personal best, so you're challenging yourself to get better all the time? It's like going in the gym and going, right, lift that 100 kilograms and go, but I only lift 40.
Yeah.
It's not possible. So obviously you're not going to lift it. And then if every time you went in, it was the same weight, you'll go, look, I'm just not going to lift that because I can't do it. And then if you go, right, no, you've got to lift it, or you're not getting paid today, you're going to go and give it a go, but you've got no confidence in doing so.
He did say this was the quick version, by the way. Carry on.
Stop training yourself to failure is the tip. Train for success. Don't train for failure.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. So, yes, we will see how we go on at Super League next week. I want to get stuck in. I want to get stuck into the Grand Slam.
Okay.
Because it's on as we speak. It's finals day. And the last 8-9 days of it, I think, have just been amazing. I think when you are looking at... Hang on, something's gone wrong. Oh, no, we're good. Sorry about that. We almost had a technical difficulty. That would have been a first, wouldn't it? Wessel Nyman. We seem to talk about him on every podcast these days. When was the last time somebody averaged over 105 in all three group games and lost them all?
James Wade averaged low 90s and won the group, for context. So, he played incredible, didn't he? He's going to get the reward. Here's the trick, and I speak about this all the time. The trick is now resiliency, because how can it... Now, I use the example of when I played Darius Labanauskas in my second World Championship appearance. I lost the opening set averaging 96. I lost it 3-0 without getting a dart at the double. And Darius just played amazing in that opening set. I walked off the stage, something I don't normally do. Normally I stay on there. And I walked off and I went, all right, I want to come back to this. I need to regroup. I need to come out and I need to find more because I'm not getting a chance. I didn't need to find more. If I average 96 against Darius Labanauskas across the board, I will get chances and I'll probably go on and win the game. But at that moment in time, panic sets in. You go, I feel I need more. You go up and you give less. So what Vessel's got to do is not come off and go, oh, 107's not enough. I'm not one game.
Yeah.
It's a freak of a situation, and he needs to just do the same. Doesn't need to find more.
The saying is, if you keep knocking on the door long enough, somebody will let you in. And that's what it feels like. If he keeps doing what he's doing right now, one day he's going to get a big win. You know, it's not going to be, it could be winning anything. I mean, if he can average 105 every game, and he obviously can't every single game, but he's doing more ton pluses, I'm sure, than anybody else. If he carries on like that, there is no reason why he can't win something big. Look what Richie's just done and what Mike Decker did. And, you know, there's no reason why. I think the action's good at the crikey. He doesn't half put him in the board. That board knows there's a dart coming when he throws it, I'll tell you. So, first thing I wanted to talk about was that I believe there's been more 110-plus averages than ever before. You're the stats man. You'll probably look into that for Sky or whatever. But, that's what I heard. And it just makes me think, when people are talking about the new brigades, if we're talking about Wessel and Luke Littler and Mike Decker and these young lads now, are they capable of taking it even further, Matt? I mean, is there a ceiling on darts? You know, there's a ceiling on golf, all right? But people have, I think there's like five people in history have shot a 59, all right? And nobody's ever beaten that. So it's like, that's where it is. That's where it's at. You can't go any further than that. It's been proved. Is there a ceiling on darts? Or can they start averaging 120?
I'm going to give you two answers.
Finally got him, I think.
When you average 100, that sounds great, averaging 100. That is missing 66% of your targets to average 100. You only need 5 successful hits. Now, where it becomes tricky is... when you look at it that way and you go, well, that's missing 66% of targets, surely these players are going to be better than missing 66% of their targets, to the point where that could easily increase. So there's a debate there very easily that averages could go up because of that. It doesn't need a massive increase on that 66% or the 33% success rate. But There's also human factors, human errors. It's a fine motor skill judged over the finest of margins. Played in a high-pressure environment with life-changing money, life-changing opportunities. But
don't sit on the fence. I want an answer.
I'm giving you the full debate first.
I know you are.
The other factor is, so as you know, I used to work heavily within the sports industry. And yeah, with that, I would often get asked, why can darts not be mastered? It's an unopposed practice over a consistent distance. It's the same distance, same board, same shape, same colors, same surrounds, same everything. Nothing changes. So how can someone not master an unchangeable environment? And
I have a thought on that.
I'm going to say I don't have the answer for it, but I also think no one ever will. So will it get better at the top end? No. At the bottom end, yeah. I think the ceiling won't go up, but the floor will extend. The floor will drop.
Okay. Now, my quick thought on that was the fact that once one dart is in the board is now not the same. So it is possible you could master every first dart you threw, but the fact that the second dart is potentially hitting the first dart changes things.
But you can still do a 9-darter using 3 open targets.
Yeah, you can, although nobody ever goes that way, do they?
Connor Scott does, doesn't he? Oh, no, he goes 181-71, then the, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, really interesting. Now then, I've got another one for you. I love these questions that I come up with for you, and I don't know the answer to this. I watched Mickey Mantle. We'll come to that. Mickey Mantle with the biggest watch I've ever seen on his throwing arm. Can you think of another darts player that wears a watch on his throwing arm?
Simon Whitlock.
Now, I can picture him with some bracelets on there, but I can't picture him with a watch.
Martin Adams.
Oh, you're coming at me with some here.
Yeah, there's a few, because I comment on
the comments below if he's got it wrong. I'm sure he hasn't.
I see a lot of people at Super Series that have things on the throwing arms, and I'm like, wow, I couldn't do that.
No, I couldn't. I mean, a bracelet that's moving every time you move your arm would drive me insane.
Yeah.
It really would. But yeah, I'm sending this massive. He's obviously left-handed. That's why I'm demonstrating for those of you listening on audio. But this massive watch, and I thought, surely over time, that has got to use more energy. So the longer you play, the longer you play, the more fatigue you're going to. I don't know. It just looks so out of place to me. And I kind of thought, I'm going to ask Matt if he's seen anybody else doing that.
Okay. It's kind of like ask you a question. You normally sit and ask questions. I'm going to ask a question myself.
No. Go on.
So how do we word this? The lineup for the last 16 onwards.
Okay.
Name value wasn't quite the same, was it? We had 5 players in the top 16 make the last 16. So name value, familiarity and things. So we're going to get a new winner on the trophy. That's guaranteed. It's going to be a different winner of the Grand Slam.
Yeah.
We're doing this off the back of Richie Edhouse winning the Europeans and Mike Dedeker winning the Grand Prix. So where do you stand on the, is this good or bad for darts?
On the fact that there are more new faces.
Wide open, different, like surprise winners. Like we had, 250-1 was Edhouse and Dedeker.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. There was a time when Phil was winning everything that I switched off. I didn't even bother watching. If it was a Premier League game and Phil was playing, I turned it off because I knew he was winning. You know, that once somebody is so dominant, and we could say Luke Humphries has been pretty dominant this year. He's been incredible. then it takes away a little bit of the, you want to, look, we're English. We want to see the underdog win. You know, why did Luke Littler shoot to fame? Apart from the fact he's a 17-year-old, you know, he's a teenager. But he kind of came from nowhere. We knew of him, obviously. But a lot of people watching the World Championship for the first time didn't know who he was. I'm going to support this kid.
You've picked up on something there, though. You want to support the underdog. Who is the underdog?
Well, okay.
And then it is Batman as good as he is without the Joker? You know, you need that. Yeah. You need that name. You need that marquee player.
So this is where it's changed. This is where it's changed for me. 2 years ago, I would say 2 years plus ago, excuse me, I don't see, and I don't mean Richie Edhouse as in him personally, I mean somebody of that standing winning a major. Mm. I saw lots of people of that standing do well and then fall at the final hurdle or fall at the semi-final or miss 9-match darts to beat somebody. And every time you were wanting them to win and they couldn't get over the line. Now, I've seen this in other sports now. It seems that we've suddenly thought, yeah, I can win this. Why can't I win this? And that's because of the Pro Tour. These guys are playing each other day in, day out. And if Richie Edhouse is beating Luke Humphries in a Pro Tour, then he thinks, well, why can't I beat him on stage?
I've got a different view on that. I don't think it's the Good. Pro Tour.
Okay.
I think it's the European Tour because they're playing on stage in front of big crowds, at times bigger than the ones on the TV. And an interesting thing about this, and I said this on Sky Sports recently, and they went, wow, I didn't even think of that. And I'm like, how has this not been talked about before? When they say people like Ian White, Dave Chisnell, why are they winning Euro Tours but not winning on TV? Advert breaks. Advert breaks. Yeah. You play on the European Tour, you go all the way through. You play on TV, you play five legs, you've got to stop. Five legs, you've got to stop. Stopping and starting, coming in and out of concentration, filling those 3 minutes with stuff. Or what is it, 2 minutes 42 most of the time, isn't it? But yeah, finding something to fill that time is different. It's something else to consider. So, yeah, absolutely. There are different factors between the two, but I'd say European tours are probably the reason that.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And while I did just mention Richie there, obviously we're so proud of him at Mission for what he's done.
He's sold loads of sleeves, hasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, go on, Richie, get those sleeves out.
But I have to say, and I know he listens to the podcast, and I'm sure he won't mind me saying, in the Grand Slam, when he went out, his focus went. And I haven't seen that for ages. So when he won the Euro, I watched every game, and no matter what score he hit, no matter what the opponent did, he walked back as if it mattered not and was totally focused on the next three darts. I watched him in the knockout stages of the Grand Slam this week and he was shaking his head. Right. He was looking at the crowd. Yep. He was looking at his own people. And I'm like, Richie, will you get back in the zone? What are you doing?
I'm sure we won't discuss anything we're going to talk about on the podcast beforehand, just for full disclosure.
Well, I'm sure people can tell that.
Now, I can send you the link to the, because I don't keep my live streams active after I've done a live stream. I do a live stream 1 hour before every big TV event and I give my predictions. And I predicted before Richie Edhouse played Rob Cross that the score line would be 10-4 Rob Cross.
Oh, very good.
And I predicted that what would happen is it'd start off close and then Edhouse would lose concentration. And he'd get caught out by Rob Cross, who would just bully him.
Yeah.
And it did. And when I was saying that, everyone's like, you can't say that, Matt. Edhouse in great form. Edhouse will probably win. I'm like, no, he won't. And I said, the reason being, what I saw from him in the group stages I didn't like. Now, what happens is you become expect when you play well, I've just described when I was playing with Ryan, how well you start going. What starts to happen when you get in that mode and you get in that vibe is you become expectant. This is going to be a 140. And then I saw Edhouse almost getting, winning legs and throwing his hands at the board, hitting 140s and throwing his hands at the board. He's getting frustrated with good darts because he's starting to seek perfection. And he's just in that mode where he needed that bit of a hammering just to come back down a little bit again and just go, oh, I am only human. I am beatable. I need to stay focused, like you said, because it got to the point where even a 140 weren't making him happy. Where else do you want to go? Do you want it 180s every shot? So yeah. I saw it coming. I predicted it an hour before that game even happened. It's there as evidence. If anyone thinks I'm talking gobbledygook, I said exactly what happened in that game was going to happen. And it did. And you can see the signs coming. You can see the warning shots. And then in reflection, you look at it and go, right, okay, so that's what you did. That's what I expected you to do. Now let's get back on it again, because I've got the World Championship coming up.
So we're changing you from prime time to Nostradamus, Edgar. Predicts the future.
I'm an analyst. Yeah, that's my job.
Yeah.
It's my job to watch body language, to watch stats, to watch data, to watch all these things come through. And ultimately, that's why I get quite a lot of jobs, because
I'm the same as you. Yeah, I'm the same as you, looking at it all the time. And that's why, like I say, seeing his focus, I'm shouting at the TV, like, Richie, get back, you know, looking at the board, and everything else has got to be, you know, left aside. You know, that's where I think Mike Dedeck has got a big future, because, boy, has he got some focus. I mean, I know he went out 10-9 to Littler, and he could have easily gone there. Look, at the end of the day, he missed one dart at the bullseye, right? He didn't miss 10 match darts. He missed one dart at the bullseye. So, yes, he was 8-3 up or something. It doesn't matter. If the other person comes back and plays as well second half as you played first half, then they're going to reverse the score, and it's going to end up on a deciding leg, which he did, and Littler played well in the deciding leg. But his composure, whether he's 8-3 up or 8-3 down, looks the same to me. It looks the same. And I think that is if you can take that onto the stage, that's where you want to be. If you're composed all the time and don't let it affect you. How many players have you seen when it really matters, giving it a bit of extra shoulder? It's a bit of extra right shoulder goes in, isn't there?
Okay, so the expression that is often used when, certainly when we're delivering a team talk, because I used to coach at a football academy. So anytime we're dealing with a situation, the expression we always used to use was take the emotion out of the situation. Take the emotion out. No emotion. Suck the emotion. And the thing is, you do, you become a bit of an emotionless soul at times. My partner says I'm cold-hearted, you know, and like, yeah. But that's because, like, even in an argument, I'm just like, you know what? I don't really give a damn, you know, just like take the emotion out of the situation. Yeah. So, but completely, again, just changing this very quickly. Could you just, like, on top of your mic, just like tap the mic?
Why is it not working?
All right, okay, that's fine. I just had this feeling that for some reason, like, we was coming through like your normal computer on rather than your actual audio mic.
Why is this down? Is it not plugged? Do you need me to hold it like that? Is that better?
Yeah, it's definitely working. Yeah, I don't know why. I just like had this little vibe. By the way, you've just probably blown our videographer's ears off, who's probably listening to this right now. Because he'd have had to turn the volumes and just the levels, and you've done that. It's like, whoa!
Yeah, well, that's all right, because I can blame you. So, yeah, have you enjoyed the Grand Slam? Two questions. Have you enjoyed the Grand Slam? And are you okay with its format now of only being PDC players?
Yes and no. Yes, I've enjoyed the Grand Slam. No, I don't like its format. There's two things I don't like about the format. Why on earth do they split the quarterfinals over Friday, Saturday? Why don't they have quarterfinals Friday, semifinals Saturday, finals Sunday? Why cram it all in on Sunday? I don't get it.
It's so you get value for money for your ticket, because the final could potentially be an hour and you've paid for a night out and you've only got...
But that's every final. That's every final. And if that's the case and you're worried about value for money, just have a pre-show. You know, get some legends in like Edgar or someone like that to come down.
I did think that legends. You made me laugh now. Because you should have said, name your top 10 legends, and I don't think you would have been in it, mate. You can't be a legend at, what are you, 35 or something?
38.
And you have to have won something. So, like, yeah, you're definitely not a legend. Well, you are a legend in other ways, obviously. You're very legendary. You're legendary at forgetting stuff.
Going the wrong way, Basingstoke. Andy, why have you put this one in? It's like 4 hours away. Matt, where are you going? Basingstoke, Matt, stop the car. You're going the wrong way.
To Yarmouth.
You're going the wrong way.
Oh, dear.
That's Friday.
Yeah. So, I forgot the question you asked me now. You were saying about the Grand Slam. Saying legends, Edgar's a legend, I have totally gone, ladies and gentlemen.
Finals Friday, Saturday semi-final, right, Sunday final.
Yeah,
it's better for players as well. You get a better standard.
Yeah, I'm all for having something different on the Sunday. And weirdly, this has just made me go off on a tangent about something Bo said. So Bo's played in the Grand Slam. She didn't qualify from the group. We know she can't play in Ali Pali because if you play at Lakeside, you can't play both.
Yep.
Correct?
Correct.
But she did make the point there's no Women's World Championship in the PDC.
Okay.
That's why she's going to Lakeside. And I went, no, there isn't. There's a world match play for women. So why isn't there a Women's World Championship PDC?
I mean, they'll probably get to that point where they will, but I don't think it needs it right now. The other thing to, here's some insight for you. You probably don't know this because you probably not had the contract. When you work for the PDC as a player, you get a PDC players contract. Now, that contract is like a Bible. It is so, it's like the yellow pages. It's got so many pages to it. It's massive. Now, this is different to the DRA rulebook. The DRA rulebook, everyone knows it's published. The PDC players contract is different. Now, in the PDC players contract, there are some interesting clauses in there. And I have put these out on videos before. And one of the clauses in that contract says that you cannot play in any event that incorporates the word world in its title. So if we put an event on called the World Mission Championship, nobody under that PDC contract is allowed to play in that tournament. Why do you think the ADC have the ADC Global Championship?
Right, so... Yeah, okay, so Bo doesn't have a PDC contract because she's not a PDC.
She's not a tour card holder, but
so she's therefore a PDPA member
who's appeared on major events. So for the PDC to be able to use her image rights the way they want to, distribution, allow the broadcaster to put her in adverts, allow the broadcaster to use that content 10, 20 years down the line, because she might go at a 9 data, she would most likely have had to have signed that PDC players contract.
So I'm not trying to throw you under a bus here. Well, maybe I am. That'd be good fun. But she surely played in the World Masters as well as the World Match Play. So that throws you under a bus.
I'm just telling you the black and white. It makes no difference to me. But yeah, it's an interesting point because it is the word world. Yeah, you're right. there was talk of us about Luke Littler because he played the JDC World Championship, but they wouldn't play, let him play the BD or the WF Junior World Championship because it used the word world. But the JDC is obviously an affiliated tour. Maybe they'll change that next year because obviously the Winmore World Masters now is going to be on the PDC, isn't it? So
Yeah, it is. Yeah, who knows? I think changes are afoot, definitely. I think things are coming and...
There's always grey area, isn't there? And that's the problem, which, well, they say it's a problem, but it's all exciting because it gives us lots of things to talk about every week.
Yeah, talking of changes, anything changing with the Premier League? You got any info on that? They changed the format or anything?
Nothing changes. Nothing. The same eight players knock out every week.
Knock out every week. Right.
Nightmare trying to pick eight players, though. But
yeah. We'll do that in a bit. Right. Can I just click a couple of buttons here, Matt? I'm just going to click a
Is it your signing off button?
No, it's not my signing off button. No, I'm just going to do that. There he is, Mr. Coates himself, Jan Dekker, who we've been talking about on the podcast for many weeks as to where is he? Well, somebody's answered. Would you believe somebody's answered and written me a very nice email? This is from Christian Hayes.
He's even got the coat on in the photo.
Yeah, he's got the coat on. Let me move out of the way. There he is. Which is weird that I just did that because he's not behind me, is he? But so this is from Christian Hayes, who said, "You will know me for he watches all the podcasts, all the videos as Christian Brewbear." And I do recall that we've mentioned that before. Hi, Andy. Hi, Matt.
Hello.
Hope you and all the team, players, and back office are well. Really enjoying the content. Superb. Writing to you to comment on your channel as I found your man, Jan Dekker, on LinkedIn.
Right.
He is now working in financial investments.
Mm.
I wanted to change that to, like, he makes blazers or something. Like, he makes coats. But, yeah, so Jan Dekker, just, I'm sure everybody will sleep better now knowing that we've found him. He's not still wearing the white coat. He's now a financial advisor. How about that?
Good industry as well. Like, you got to be careful with your money. You know, you got to put it in the right places.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so... I just thought I'd throw that in at you. And while I'm doing letters, actually, now this is a cracker, by the way. So don't forget, guys, if you want to email me something juicy, like we know where Jan Dekker is now, but YouTube at missiondarts.com. I read them all. I reply to them all. And, you know, you can literally reach out with anything you want to talk about. So Michael, and this is where it's hard to say, it's dear. Beveen, I think. He's from Holland. Dieppeveen, maybe. Hey, guys. Some suggestions for the new series of Rate My Hockey. And he's given us four.
Oh, wow.
So, all right, here we go. Rate the hockey at famous dart players' homes and do a quick fire round of questions with them.
So we're doing the short list?
Yep. Number two. Maybe you can go to a local dart shop and check out the hockey there and check out the product choice and what they have in store.
Starting next week, Wednesday, 7 o'clock.
Perfect, isn't it? Question three, is the venue wheelchair friendly? Are there boards that hang lower for people in wheelchairs or that have disabilities? I think that's got to be included now in one of the categories. We did go somewhere that had this. Do you remember?
Yeah, it's Basingstoke. They have the children's board.
The Crucible.
They? Yeah.
Yeah. So we need to think about
think
that.
We can consider it. I mean, we considered it in access to play, didn't we? Because I marked, not access to play, in facilities, because I marked down the academy because they didn't have a lift, but there was upstairs. So we do look. I mean, this is the other thing to remember with Rate My Hockey. We get to show you about 45 seconds worth of clip for each category. and we can't have it go on for it. We can't go through everything because I know someone went, oh, you marked this down for that, but not that. And it's like, well, if we've not mentioned the car park, it's because the car park doesn't stand out as something that we need to bring up. So just imagine it's okay. It's just a normal. You can't go, oh, yeah, it's car park. But if we bring something up, it's because that is the key points of that thing. So we can't run through every category. But yeah, we do sort of put this sort of stuff as consideration. Yeah, certainly in facilities.
Yes, and I think it could have a bonus point for something like that, rather than taking points off for not having it, maybe a bonus point if it does. Yeah. And then the last question, do they have an air con system for those hot summer days? And if so, does it affect the throw? Because players often complain about drafts on stages. I quite like that question. We did the series in the summer, but I don't recall going anywhere that was roasting hot. So there must have been some thought gone into that. I'm sure. Oh, in fact, I do recall. At the Crucible again, you said they had fans. And I said, that's great. But where they were, if you turn them on, your data would be going all over the place. So that's consideration, but it's actually more harm than it is good. So again, whether we can squeeze something about, is it too hot? You know, so where we talk about the throw and throw perception.
Throw deviations, because I talked about things like reflections, the TB being in the wrong place because it gave me that response at Brunel View. What about something like that? Like within the series one, they had the venue did absolutely amazing, but it was next to the fire door and people kept going out there for smoking. Now, in the winter, when that wind comes through, so maybe the board position. What was the other thing as well? Shepwell's, where they had a small stage, but then there was a fire door, so it's not like you can even stand there to watch. Yeah. So maybe things like
lots
throw considerations and lots, or something.
Yeah, lots and lots of good comments coming in.
Yeah, I like that.
About Ray Miyake and things that we can change. So thank you very much for that.
Are you going to leave Jan Dekker there the whole podcast?
No, he's going. Jan's going now. We've seen you long enough, Jan, now.
He's got to go do some financial advice. Yeah. This is where it's all been a big scheme, isn't it? And in January, we're going to announce Jan Dekker as a mission player and he's going to Q school. And
No. No, we're definitely not. Anything else on the agenda this week, Matt? What else is on your mind? What else is on your darts world? Because I haven't done comments this week. I've mentioned that I've not been very well, so I haven't been trailing through your comments. So please don't, if you think, why has he not mentioned my amazing comment from this week? I'll maybe get to it next week. But for this week, it's been, I've been in bed most of the week, but I'm all right now. I'm all right. I'm feeling much better. So you got any top threes for me this week or anything like that?
I'll get my violin out then for you, but then you said you was okay, so I can put it away again. Yeah? I'm good.
There's no chance of you getting that out for me, Matt. There's no chance, is there? Let's be honest.
So there's one thing I want to discuss very briefly because I've already had 48 minutes of your company, so it's... where do you... I know where you're going to stand on this. Where do you stand on the crowds right now? Because it's a very hot topic.
Oh, that is a great question, Matt. I was only thinking about it last night as De Decker was trying to get over the line. And the crowd turned completely against him and were whistling and booing. And I thought his composure was amazing. So I've already mentioned that, and let's not mention it again. So where do I stand on it? Right, so I've got to do it from two angles. I've got to do it from a personal point of view, and I've got to do it from a more general point of view. My personal point of view is do what you want. Crowd can do what they want, other than throwing things on stage, which I know has actually happened in the past.
Adrian Lewis.
Yeah, The crowd can do what they want for me. They can whistle, boo, shout, jeer, make noise, don't make noise. They've paid the money. Nobody can go to a football match and tell the crowd to shut up. Nobody can go to, you know, so darts is a pub sport played in front of big crowds, and it's now for big money. And that is only because of supporters, right? That money is not coming without those supporters. So do what they want, right? Learn to deal with it. Certain players do. Certain players whinge about it. Certain players only whinge about it when they've got beat. From a general point of view, would I prefer it if they were a bit more respectful? Yes. Yes. I think it has got a bit... the one thing I hate more than anything is the whistling. And do you know what? Not even so much for the player, but if I'm sat next to that guy wanting to enjoy the evening and every dart he's whistling at the top, I'd be going, mate, can you sit down and shut... You know what I mean? Because he must be driving the people around him mad whistling like that. And I know a few of the guys that I've been to darts with, if somebody did that, they wouldn't do it for long. Yeah, they really wouldn't. So
I think everyone's going to want you in the crowd now, like to go, shut up. Yeah. Try and enjoy a pint and watch a game here.
Yeah. So I'm not saying put security everywhere in the crowd. I mean, don't get me wrong, if somebody's being racist or whatever they're being, that's different. But if somebody's making noise when they shouldn't be, and I know we've talked, there's been a lot said about this over the years. I just hate the whistling. I can stand the booing. I can stand the jeering. I can stand the cheering for the other person over enthusiastically. It's just the whistling that drives me mad.
How much manpower does it take to manage that? Why? Because I've heard people go, when they start whistling, kick them out. We've got 4,000 people in the crowd. How many security guards do we need now to be able to eject people if they don't want to? I'm not leaving. I'm fine. I'm just going to sit here whistling. I'm good.
Yeah.
No, you need to go. Okay, right, we need to remove you. Right, how many people does it take to do that? And is that more disturbing to the game than just... Look, because I saw Kurt Bevins put a tweet out about it, didn't he? And he said, sometimes when you dress it, it gets worse. It doesn't get better.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Mickey Mansell, in his interview, when he said, James Wade goes, I don't like him being slow. And he's like, oh, he's going to get more of that then. Oh, you've just told me what you don't like, so I'm going to do it more.
Yeah, it comes with the territory. If you don't want to play in this park, then don't. But if you want to earn the big bucks, we need the supporters. And you're unfortunately, the more you get, the more chance you're going to get of idiots. You know.
And the thing is, right, the same conversation will come up, because when Lakeside comes around in a couple of weeks' time, it'll be a much more quieter atmosphere. It'll be a bit more like old school. And when that comes around, I bet you then there'll be people again jumping in the comments going, oh, it's dead. So you can't have it
too quiet.
You can't have an atmosphere, but control how they do it.
No, you can't. I'd love to hear people's comments on this below about. I think it's a really big topic. You know, can anyone think of a way it could be better without just saying, like you say, right? Somebody tells him to shut up. You know, because again, alcohol goes with darts. People go for it. It's a night out to them. It's a night out. They're going to have 10 pints, they're going to have a pizza, they're going to watch the darts, they're going to sing along, they're going to boo, they're going to cheer, and they're going to spend 100 quid. And that's their night out. So who's going to tell that person what their night out should be? Yeah. It's difficult. Yeah. It is difficult.
Well, hopefully our viewers will be able to give us a few opinions on that as well, which we will look forward to. catching up with those. As we very briefly touched on there, we know Rate My Hockey comes to an end. You've got one more episode coming. Then that is it for 2024. We are starting a new series. Wednesday, 7 o'clock, we are trying to bring you a new episode of something every single week. So you know you can rely on us here at Mission Darts to give you some entertaining content 7 o'clock every Wednesday. And our goal is to expand on that as we move forward. We will be giving you something educational at 5 o'clock on a Monday, and we're hoping to make that consistent, just like you get your podcast every Sunday. So we're looking to give you regular content that you know what to get. And on Wednesdays, you watch this, you deserve a bit more insight. Rate My Hockey ends for series two, and we start a new series. This series is where myself, and sometimes with Andy, we have gone around the UK. We have found you darts shop. And what we are looking to do is not just show you where these dart shops are, show you the stuff you can buy from them. What do they stock? But not only that, what are the services? Can you go out there and can you then go in and get any expertise? Is there a chance to try? What services and what things are out there for you in the UK?
Yeah, it's going to be a great series. It really is. So get subscribed, guys. And we'll see you next Sunday. Same time, same place, if not before,
on a very exciting video.
You never know. Thanks, Matt. Catch you next week.